Somewhere in Northeast Ohio, I'm Josh McClay, aka O'Malley of O'Malley's Adventure. That's Brian Weller, aka Sasquatch, a Two Tigers Tactical, and this is the Patient Patriot Podcast. I
Yes, it
want to
is.
thank everybody for joining. Whether you're watching live or in post, the number to contact the show is 330-809-1924, or you can email us now at thepatientpatriot@yahoo.com. And I'm
Man,
going
you're
to take a
getting
breath.
official. Hey, yeah, catch your breath there, brother. What those of you who are joining us and may watch this later don't know is poor Josh just finished a podcast for O'Malley's Adventure talking local news and politics with another good friend of ours, Lee. And I kid you not, man, he just literally wrapped that up. I sat in the hot seat. And we're firing up what is round number two for him and round number one for me on tonight's edition of the Patient Patriot. For those of us, those of you who already kind of checked out where this podcast is going, then you know the topic we're going to talk about. But if you're joining us and you didn't really kind of look at the information for tonight's episode, Josh hit on it briefly there, the idea of a cold civil war. And I'll say what brought this back up to the forefront of my mind because we do have a live studio audience here as well tonight, and which is something fun for us and unusual. But talking amongst friends and reading articles, the idea that we are in a soft civil war is not a new concept. For maybe for you watching, this is a brand new idea. And maybe you've been aware of the division, the strong division amongst our populace over the last 2 years that has intensified. But even before that, for the previous eight under the past president, there's been a divide that's growing and sharpening. And this is not a concept that is fringe anymore. This is the idea of a soft civil war, a cultural civil war, or a cold civil war. Was really hit upon in the mainstream back in September of last year. There are multiple articles. If you just Google soft civil war, most of the major news outlets were already talking about this, maybe even going back to summer of last year. And I would tell you that Bill O'Reilly, all the way back to the day after Trump was elected, already coined this term. And I don't know who came up with it originally, maybe somebody before him, I don't know. But he was on this topic a full 2 years ago and some change because the night of the election, when it became clear that Trump had won, short of any major, coup or radical alter in the count, there were already people rioting on the West Coast and burning buildings out and flipping cars the night of the election results. So O'Reilly was on it way before really it became even mainstream and was talking about a civil war in our culture. So we thought we would bring it up because what really kickstarted it again for me was a friend of mine sent me an article talking about the Cold Civil War.
I got your notes.
And thanks, brother.
Yeah.
And the idea that that we might be in the midst of maybe the precursor to increased tension leading to violence. So, we kind of wanted to talk about that tonight. In light of other polarizing issues, we're in the midst here in January of 2019. We're in the midst of a government shutdown over border security and a border wall, and the country seems to be sharply divided over the issue of immigration. And Josh and I talked about that in a previous episode. If you take the time to check it out, it's a complex and nuanced issue. And but in the mainstream of public discourse, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of nuanced discussion. We are extremely polarized in this country. So, that's kind of where we're at. And if you don't know that, you've obviously been living under a rock. We are a divided culture. That's where we're at now. One of the things I'd like to talk about is how did we get here? Do you have any thoughts that you'd like to share before I kind of launch into what I think past what we've opened with?
As far as what got us here?
Or where we currently are, what you see in the political landscape as I take a sip of not black coffee, but certainly not dressed up to my liking. I mean, not that I'm complaining he gave it to me for free, but you can see he's serving it in a blue Eeyore cup, which is, I don't even know what to do with this, man.
We generally start light, and because we didn't really have a light topic and I didn't have marshmallows for his somewhat hot chocolate, I had to put it
Hot chocolate.
in a child's cup, as you can see.
Wow, that's harsh, dude. A child's cup? Oh, bother. You got me in an Eeyore mug.
But heck, I forgot what I was going
Man, that's delicious. No, our
to
current political
say. Oh,
landscape is.
yes. I think we are in a day and age of identity politics gone completely wrong. I was telling Lee off camera, I don't even use the R word or the D word very much anymore. I think that's a mistake. I think we're I explain it like this. If this is the left and this is the right, and the fringe is pulling each way, moving that center, but it's the lunatic fringe on the way outer edge that's actually moving the center, and that's the problem, because they're putting you in a position where you have to pick. Where before there were some issues that, regardless of party, there was some crossover. Now it's so polarized that if you say that you're an NRA member, there's no way you could be a Democrat. I mean,
Not in this current climate, not easily.
no, uh-uh.
No.
No, you would have a hard time talking that one through to a lot of people. And I think that's the problem. I think you have, especially some of the younger people in certain parties who don't remember stuff like this, and that they think that, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But I have 3,000 years of recorded history on my side that show that socialism never works. It's one of the few times you can say never.
Unless it's in very small groups that are voluntary, basically a family unit is a light form of, I mean, not to get sidetracked on a rabbit trail, but collectivism isn't always entirely bad. It's forced collectivism, which is the government form of socialism that ends up never working, as evidenced by Venezuela. You would think that having a real live demonstration of its failure in our lifetime would be enough to turn people off to it. The fact that people are eating out of dumpsters and eating their dogs would be enough to make people go, that's probably not the best system. But on the other hand, I think it's also just as arguable that the current form of corrupt crony capitalism is not the best system either. And so you can understand why a lot of people feel disenfranchised and are looking for solutions outside of what we have typically held dear in this country, which is individual liberty, individual responsibility, and cash is king collectivism, or I mean capitalism, excuse
Capitalism,
me.
right.
So that's kind of where we are, and Ed brings up the point that it's so divided now, and I know here in our audience and even among Josh and I that it's, I mean, we're not quite in the 1860s North versus South. It's not that heated up yet, but it certainly is brother versus brother, hard divisions within family structures, hardcore right versus left, and people have ever increasing distances between their political views. And so I think it's sharpening. It's I think it was brewing for quite a while, and then we're going to dive into kind of how did we get here. I think really this kind of environment kicked off, I want to say, back in the 1960s, that we had up until and up and through the 1950s, we shared, most Americans, and I would say an overwhelming majority, shared a love of capitalism. Although, going back to the Great Depression, you had some on the fringe that were looking for a socialist answer all the way back into the 20s. But really, we had common culture, common religious belief, common political discourse, and a civility, a tone of civility in political disagreement. And it wasn't so much these exaggerated polls as much as, like you said a minute ago, the idea that if we were arguing about immigration, it would be okay, well, do we let more Irish people in, or do we let more Italian people in? It was these smaller, the gap between the two positions was much smaller and easier to bridge with reasonable people. But that really changed in the 1960s and has, I think, if you look back historically, the Cold Civil War that we are currently in has really been brewing. It had its birth and genesis in the 60s and has been brewing since the 70s and 80s and is now crystallizing here in the new millennia. But there was a incredible quote here from Bloomberg, which like a broke watch, about twice a day gets it right. And there's a lot you could argue against Bloomberg, but this quote was fascinating to me. It says, this is a quote from a former GOP speechwriter by the name of David Frum. He wrote for George W. Bush, and he said, quote, "When highly committed parties strongly believe things that they cannot achieve democratically, or they strongly believe that things cannot be achieved democratically, they don't give up on their beliefs, they give up on democracy." So what that means is, if I could sum that up maybe in plainer language, is that when people believe that the ballot box doesn't work anymore, then they are more willing to resort to violence. When they feel that their political goals can't be achieved, then they shift. They don't give up on those ideals and say, well, it's unachievable. That doesn't happen. They
Right.
double down and say, this is achievable, but I need new tools. And that's where we've come.
Right. And a lot of the new tools come in the form of legislation that is basically sacrificing some of those first 10 on the list
Yeah, the Bill of Rights.
of right. And I can't stress enough that if people would exercise those rights, that a lot of the problem would go away. And let me give you, for instance, hate speech. There's no such beast. That is a completely subjective topic. The Supreme Court even said, and as much as I'm not a big fan of the Supreme Court right now, they even said, but now you have these groups of people that if they don't agree with me, I'll shut you up this way. And again, some people will back away and they'll stop talking for whether it's for financial gain, they don't want to hurt their business or whatnot,
Sure.
instead of continuing to speak, right? If you don't exercise your rights, they will go away. And I think what we're living in now is one of those reasons. Everybody wanted to be nice. Well, let's just get along. Let's reach across the aisle and we'll compromise. Well, you compromised a lot of things away.
Interesting.
And that's my thoughts. I think a lot of what's going on had good intention to start. But with anything else, I mean, you can take it too far.
Well, and I think that's what happens is that, you swing from one pole to the other. You swing from a Barack Obama, which conservatives or people on the right would have thought was an abysmal president. And then you swing all the way back to the other extreme, which is some people would call a buffoon of President Trump. And so we vacillate between these two poles, man. Hyper leftist versus hyper right leaning, and we can't find any balance at all. And it's like I said, it goes back to the 60s, the idea that the left, for lack of a better term to generalize the political left, found frustration in the fact that the gears of change were moving too slow. Bob Dylan's song, "The Times They Are a Changin'," but they felt like they weren't changing quick enough, or far enough, or fast enough. And then so you started to see, and for some reasons, very good. Obviously, the Civil Rights Movement came out of the 60s. That was important. I
Right.
think everybody would agree on the right and left, very
Right.
critical, equal rights. But some of the tools that were being used by, Weathermen Underground and radicals on the left, with mail bombs and kinds of burning things down
Right.
and destructive revolution. And so what happens is you get this push from the left in the 60s that says, okay, the political system doesn't work for us anymore, so we're going to switch to violence. And violence as exhibited by maybe the Black Panthers after they were corrupted from their original purpose, or the far left Marxists. And then you get a reaction from the right, which is to double down even harder and entrench the political lines and say, no, we have to go even further back historically. And instead of moving towards the moderate middle, I would argue that where we are today is a direct result of both sides kind of amping up. Mm-hmm. You know, the left pushes harder and then the right clamps down harder, or the establishment versus the individual, because it breaks down on a lot of different lines. And then some of this too happens with the unraveling of common culture and religion. The idea that America is a postmodern society. Many people would argue that when we dropped the bomb on Hiroshima, that that's when we left modernism behind, because up until that point, we believed that, you know, machinery and technology was going to save us. We kind of shifted away from theological salvation to mechanical salvation. And then when the bomb was dropped, we saw how devastating the technology was without morality. And I know that's a whole different episode. We could talk about the morality of the bomb. But we kind of came to an understanding that, look, this technology may not save us. And we became a postmodern society.
Right.
And in that, then you have this fracturing, this split from religion and this split from common culture. And you've got a lot of different factions and splinter cells of people that, you know, like you said, identity politics. I'm this, but I am not that. Instead of coming together as Americans and saying we have a place to go and things to achieve. So that's kind of how we, now it was slow cooking after the 60s, and a lot of change was quickly brought about, especially in civil rights, women's rights, stuff like that. Then you kind of had a simmer down through the 70s and 80s and then a ramp back up to where we are today. And so social media has played a lot into that, access to media and how rapidly thoughts can spread. But in my mind, that's kind of where we've come from and how we've got here.
I think one of the a good example of the unraveling is a certain group of people chose to have a women's march in California. And they canceled the march because they said it was overwhelmingly white.
Mm-hmm.
So my first question was, okay, so now we're going to break down and create a hierarchy within a specific gender.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't meet that, then women don't have rights?
Yeah, if the group is too white, then they can't march for...
Right. Do you see how that...
Yeah, and that goes to show how amplified this splintering has become.
Absolutely.
That it's groups within groups. And, you know, the British called this the Great Game. I'm listening to a fascinating podcast by Daniele Benelli, who is an Italian history professor and historian, and he does a great job of talking about his podcast is History on Fire. And he talks about all these great events, many of them involving warfare and conquest. But I'm listening to a series he did about a year or two ago on the conquest of Mexico by Cortez. And how Cortez, Hernando Cortez, came in and divided tribe against tribe against tribe with the ultimate goal of conquering the entire land. And they were so busy infighting, much like we are today in America, that they couldn't see the larger picture that somebody was taking over while they were fighting amongst themselves. And I think we're having the same kind of issues now, is that whether the, you know, it's the right or the left, man, the government's an evil beast in many ways, mm-hmm. And gaining and usurping more and more power, more and more tax dollars. And while we're fighting back and forth over, you know, mansplaining or manspreading on the subway,
right?
You know, you've got people on the top that are just absolutely financially raping us through increased interest rates, through an increasing, ever-increasing national debt
right.
that we will now never pay off.
No.
Never.
Right.
We are over $21 trillion, and the insanity of that is not even talked about while we're busy arguing about how to fund a border wall.
Right. And to me, when I look at that party now as a whole, if you would rewind it 10 years, you know, a national debt climbing at that rate, the quote-unquote conservatives would be having a cow.
Mm-hmm.
And now... It's not even a blip
no,
on the radar.
Under Bush Jr., it was compassionate conservatism, which allowed him to have social conservative values, but spin like a drunk sailor on a right. crack bench, and not to malign drunken sailors, because, hey, they're all right, too. But, you know, just this idea that we're going to spend ourselves into oblivion. And then Obama came and doubled down on spending, and now Trump is just as bad.
Right.
I mean, it's over the last damn 12 years,
right,
we have not had a fiscal conservative in office, which is evidenced by the fact that we've gone from a national debt in the teens to over $20 trillion. And that's kind of where, and that's what I see some of this is the idea that the powers that be, whether you call that big government, whether you think that there's something more nefarious, you know, the fifth column or the deep state or foreign interests that are taking over, like China, as they gobble up our national debt and start squeezing us out of global dominance. The idea that we're so busy infighting amongst all these little cultural Marxist groups that we're missing the larger picture. I want to read a quote here. This is from the Washington Times. It says, Americans increasingly are either proud of past U.S. traditions and ongoing reform and the understanding of American exceptionalism, or they insist that the country was hopelessly flawed at its birth and must be radically reinvented. Man, that's something to think about. And what we have here is failure to communicate, to quote a famous movie. What we have here is a divide between two visions of what the Constitution is supposed to look like. You have what might easily be described as conservatives, you and me, I'd say more traditional libertarians or even traditional liberals, to be honest, like Jeffersonian liberals. The idea that we value individual liberty, property rights, the original intent of the Constitution, which you've hit on multiple times as this president has had the good fortune of picking two Supreme Court justices, and it looks like possibly a third with Ginsburg struggling in her health, which, you know, I don't wish ill on anybody. I hope she recovers, and then I hope she quickly retires. The fact that this guy might have three picks in one term of his there's no precedence for that.
There's no precedent that lucky.
That's wild. But he's not picking originists
or contextualists.
Yeah, or constitutionalists that are traditional that say this is the document we should be running by. And that's kind of the conservative side of America on one side of the Civil War. And on the other side, you have people, liberals, that would say, no, this is a living document, just like they would argue maybe with biblical texts 25, 30 years ago in the seminaries, that the Bible is a living document that is open to reinvention and evolution and moderation. And in some ways it is. There's a process there in place to have that. But the left wants to take that process further and faster, and the right wants to slow that process almost to a grinding halt. Right. And so you have these two visions of America, one that says that, yeah, we were great and we need to become great again, to use the president's terms, or one that says we were never great and we need to radically transform in order to be great, and that's where the divide is.
Right. Or there's the few like myself. America's always been great. People die to get here every day for the past, 100-some years. So if you do that whole what's the MAGA thing,
yeah, make okay. America great again.
Yeah.
It's been great the whole way through. There's no other place on the planet I'd want to live.
I was going to say, I'm 46 years old, and I can't see me being any place else. And I've actually been to some other countries, and I can tell you with a fair amount of certainty, you say you want it, but you really don't. And I'll leave that one at that. But as far as the Civil War itself as a cold Civil War now,
mm-hmm.
If you look at the first war between the states, it was basically an issue of states' rights,
mm-hmm.
Right? You had North, you had South. Okay. When you look at this scenario, it is, I mean, even a state as a whole could be broken up into...
it could, but I think it's interesting that you kind of segued here naturally without the notes in front of you, because this is kind of where I wanted to go anyways, is that part of understanding our current circumstances is understanding how the nation is divided. And although you could get down into, you know, this city and this part of the state versus this town, you know, like Toledo versus Cleveland versus Massillon or Canton or right. More rural parts of the state, and I get what you're saying. You could get down into the weeds that micro instead of a macro vision.
Right.
But the macro vision is really the coasts versus the heartland.
Mm-hmm.
That if you were going to have a geographic civil war at this point, it wouldn't be North versus South. It would be west of the Rockies, joined with, you know, east of Ohio,
right,
combined with, or standing against much of the Midwest and the South, and so, which is, you know, it's interesting that we're dealing with another hot button issue, the Electoral College. That the
man, you must have been reading my mind, because I was going to use. Well, go ahead now.
Yeah, just the idea that legislation is currently being introduced to try and eradicate that and switches to a popular vote democracy instead of a representative republic. The idea that you know, whoever has the most people wins, and then therefore hardcore population concentrations within these urban cities then gets to dictate what the rules are for the rest of the country, right. Middle America that might not agree at all.
I was going to say, if you win the southern part of the state of California, you run the country.
You would run the, yeah, and, in New York.
Right, in New York. Mm-hmm. And I was going to sort of go into a scenario where what would actually be the tipping point. And
well, before we get there, though, you know, our one friend asked me what I thought if we had been in this kind of circumstance since the Civil War, a leaning towards a cold Civil War or such a divided political climate since the Civil War. And can you think of any times? Because I thought of a couple that stood out in my mind.
Well, the Civil Rights Movement itself.
Yeah, we mentioned that, the 60s. That, we were real close there.
Well, and there were some areas of the country you just didn't want to be.
Yeah, well, they were in small-scale Civil War, absolutely. What about and before that?
I'd have to say that World War II era.
Interesting.
You have to remember that even back then, even though the country was harder, I mean, harder by meaning of thick skin.
Tougher.
I mean, at the end of the day, we lined up Hitler's youth and we shot him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking about kids 15 or less, and no one batted an eye. You know, we had we had, believe it or not, concentration camps here in the United States in certain areas that had prisoners of war for, some would say, extended periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say some of the divide, even though now it's easy to show a divide because of mass media, mm-hmm. where back then, I mean, heck, you could damn near hide it.
Interesting.
You know?
And I wouldn't have thought of that.
And I would say shortly after September 11th would be a big one.
And that's interesting, because that'll lead us to what might join us back together here in a minute, but we're not there yet. So you're saying September 11th might have been another point
absolutely.
Where we could have
easily divided. Or shortly right there.
Short after.
Yep.
You're saying World War II. I argued that economically, probably during the Great Depression, because you had a lot of people pushing for forms of socialism then in the Great Society, which ended up passing, mm-hmm. and that there were definitely strong undercurrents of reinventing ourselves as a nation and a socialist ideal and a kind of a Civil War mindset of dividing a nation even back then. So something else I wanted to talk about was the idea of tribalism. You've talked about that. This cultural Marxism is another name for it. Is that it's now the new American norm that people are broken down into groups based on gender, sexual orientation, religion, race, ethnicity, sports teams. And that's now our central idea, that I am a NRA member first, and then I'm everything else afterwards.
Right.
I am a conservative first, or I am a revolution, whatever it is, that identity now takes preeminence among everything else that we could talk about, whether it's American or Christian or, you know, just being a kind person, that we've divided ourselves into these small little blocks and they get increasingly smaller. And that, at least within the Washington Times article that I read, that for many people, this new political polarization and this new tribalism is the central theme in their life. It's not their religion anymore. It's Browns versus Steelers. It's right versus left.
Right.
That this is my new passionate identity that I'm willing to fight for. It's not the Constitution or natural rights, individual human rights. It's group identity.
Right.
And what group am I a part of that's been victimized, and how can I use that to my political advantage? That's the new norm.
Right. And where those two intersect.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe you fall into maybe two categories.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. If you're more than one, then how are you going to divide that?
Right. And who defines that?
Yeah.
That's I think that's maybe a bigger problem, because now let's say that you're economically not very well off, and let's say that you're male, right? Now where do you align in that?
Yeah, which group, which
Because
victim group are you going to identify with?
right, because you almost can't according to postmodern standards.
Which leaves the big ones back to the hard right and hard left,
Right.
and why we stayed so divided. And so, we could sit here and talk a lot about this issue. You guys see it on the news every day, and like I said, with every political story that comes out, there's a an immediate, not a sense of how do I find context in this story, or how do I find more information to find out what's factual and true. But there's an immediate desire to spin it into a political argument to win, almost like a chess match over my adversaries. Like this young lady that was shot here, I believe this last weekend, and there was immediate media outcry based on false witness, eyewitness testimony that it was, some kind of crazy white nationalist that shot this poor young black girl. And that became the national diatribe until it wasn't anymore. And the reality was the shooter was a black man. And it was a case of identity, and it was gang related and maybe drug related. But my point is, in bringing that story up, is the idea that we push so quick to try and politicize every doggone event that we see in front of us, that we don't look for understanding or context. We're just out to win brownie points against our political enemy. And so I think this leads us to one of a handful of possible outcomes. So we've talked about, where we currently are, a severely divided country, and where that came from, maybe the abandonment of traditional religion, the breakdown of family structure, the widening gap between socioeconomic groups, and the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. A whole lot of elements. We talked about the timeline from the 60s all the way to now. What we haven't talked about is where this might go in the next weeks, months, and 5 to 7 years. And I forget who. It might have been foreignpolicy.com. Yeah, it was. Foreignpolicy.com did an article on this about what civil war might look like. And it's, you have to be careful when you use this term, the idea that civil war, we automatically think geographic, large scale
Right.
warfare between the North and the South. And that's when people like you and me that are training and well armed and patriotic start thinking, and I have friends like this. I don't personally want to see it come. But I have friends that are like, yeah, bring it on.
Right.
They're like, they're ready. They're ready to go gun in and,
Right.
take the stand on the bridge at Concord and Lexington
Right.
and shoot down, everybody in their path and the uneducated zombies out there. And that's one possible outcome, but that's not what civil war is going to, if it goes hot, that's not what it's going to look like in our culture. But before we get there are some other things that might happen that would fall short of physical violence. One possible out of maybe five is that we could just become more civil.
Right.
I mean, in a Pollyannish dream, that maybe we all smoke enough dope when it's legalized that we all
Well,
just chill out and say,
kind of
hey,
smooth things out.
yeah, let's just calm down and watch some Netflix and chill
Right.
in a non-sexual way. So we could all become more civil, but that seems to be increasingly harder to do, right? I mean, I see a story on Facebook and I immediately want to respond and combat and, be an information warrior and fight for the truth. So it's harder and harder to become, to stay civil or to push for civility in our discourse, even though whichever party is out of power always argues for that. No, we've got to be more civil as they ramp up the schizophrenia within our culture and kind of whip their people, their base into a frenzy. So the idea that we're going to become more civil doesn't seem likely to me if I'm a realist. Another possible path could be the fact that we have an outside threat like 9/11 that's so serious and severe. Think maybe Chinese aggression, Russian aggression, not likely, unless it's a false flag in my opinion, or alien invasion, something big enough, a meteor coming to Earth like the movie Armageddon,
Right.
that we go, oh crap, we've got something bigger to worry about. I think that's another thing that we haven't really addressed, and the idea that we're so divided is the fact that maybe We've become so wealthy. We've become so comfortable. We've become so decadent
Oh,
that
absolutely.
we can afford to argue over small shit like this.
Right.
You know,
And
it,
I did a small piece on global poverty. To be above the poverty line globally, right? You only have to be above, like, let's say it's $33,000.
Yes, low 30s, and you are richer than 90% of the Earth's population.
Exactly.
That's
And
insane.
I think a lot of people lose track
Yeah.
of that. You know, I have
That's a good point.
some decent friends that are retired that swear that everything's coming undone and that life is bad and this, that, and the other. And I was like, okay, well, your house is paid for. You're collecting a pension. You're going to on vacation once, maybe twice a year.
True.
Explain to me again. You know, Ben Shapiro was at a restaurant and he was overhearing somebody talk about things coming apart and whatnot. As they were drinking wine, a $150 bottle of wine, and you're talking about how things are so bad. How, you know, I think some serious self-awareness might go a long way when people make those claims, I would
Sure,
think.
and I would agree. And I think on the left, the tendency is to say things are so economically bad, and I am so disenfranchised and outside of the system that we need communist revolution. And on the right, the easy low-hanging fruit to point at is to say these damn millennials. You know, if this is the generation that we're going to be left in their hands, man, the world is unraveling. And I think your point is that no, it's not unraveling yet. But still, we want to raise an alarm to say that if we don't start to act like normal, humanity-loving and future-loving human beings, God-fearing, we might be in trouble in another 5 to 7 years or sooner. And so we talked about the fact that we could become more civil, but it's not likely. We talked about the fact that an outside threat might unite us, but short of that appearing, that's not likely either. And so then you have maybe one of three paths that this might grow into over the next 2 years through the end of Trump's administration if they don't impeach him, or re-election if the Democrats can't run. And not that it's original with me, but I'm telling you, the Democratic ticket is Michelle and Hillary in 2020. I guarantee that's what Trump is going to have to run against. You heard it here first if you haven't heard it already.
That's an interesting
Michelle
scenario.
Obama and Hillary Clinton, that's the 2020 ticket on the left. And so if he wins re-election, then you might see this kind of heating up. And so the three paths that remain in front of us then, short of hot civil war, people are shooting and standing on the corners, engaging in warfare, is you might see an increasing growth in traditional federalism, which is state rights. The idea that, hey, this state wants to pass gay marriage and they're going to do it. Or, like we have in Ohio, this state's going to pass medical marijuana regardless of what the feds say. Or this state's going to pass anti-gun or pro-gun rights regardless of what the federal constitution. So, you're going to see more balkanization through the cover of state rights.
And I'm that's kind of where I was going to go with the Electoral College. Is, well, we'll get to that at the end. But as far as states' rights go, I think that part might have already started because I believe it was Arizona under Barry
Yeah.
that tried to defend their southern border and he sued them. You know, when the federal government steps in and sues a state for
Who's
securing its own borders, any of that
Yes.
sound familiar? So who's allowed to now look at the hierarchy. You're a state, you're not allowed to secure your border, right? I'm Fedzilla. I can secure your border, but you can't.
Yes. And
And
even though I can, I'm not going to. Yeah, and we've talked about this personally off air really for the last probably 4 or 5 years, the idea that that states' rights versus federal power is really is the new civil war in some ways,
sure.
outside of the culture war that we're in. So you might see a rebirth or a strengthening of traditional federalism, which is, I know it's kind of it seems backwards when you say federalism. You think that the federal government has all the power, but that's not what it traditionally meant. It meant state rights. And so you might see an increase of states saying, hey, look, this is the way we're going to do it where we live, and you're not going to stop us. That's one path. Another path might be cessation. You know, California has talked about it ever since Trump was elected, and it has become more and more popular. And I know people on the right say, let them. You know, everything west of the Rockies can just go ahead and secede. And I don't know that that's the right answer.
No.
Maybe it is. I don't know. But we're looking at more and more states pondering this concept. Texas.
Texas is, yeah.
You know, and depending on who's in power, you see kind of those that list of states switch
right
back and forth on who's talking secession. But that might be another possibility. And then the final possibility that we obviously don't hope for and don't want to see is a hot civil war.
Right.
And what would that look like? Do you think that would look like the 1860s where, you know, we're dividing into large military action amongst the civilian population? Do you think that would be the case?
The one podcast I listened to, the guy said it best. If a civil war would go hot, keep in mind that the right has all the guns.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean a whole lot, man. I know that it's easy to say that on the front end.
Well,
but it was the left that was bombing police departments and buildings and coming up with the anarchist cookbook.
My point being, though, those areas would be the worst.
As far as violent action.
Yes.
No, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Yes. Yeah.
And that's, I never thought that I would actually consider that that would ever be a possibility until maybe a couple months ago.
Hmm.
And when you hear people talking about legislation as far as the Electoral College goes, are we at that point of the conversation where we talk about tipping point?
Well, we are, and that brings up some questions. So, you know, I'm always hesitant to dive into, even though I watch and I kind of chuckle on the side, is, you know, guys like Ed engage and throw some quick jabs out to kind of make us laugh about, you know, harassing me about my coffee and stuff like that. But and I'm always hesitant because we usually get into such a deep conversation that I kind of let the scroll go until after the show. But we have some important questions coming up that I wouldn't mind addressing. And,
and what
you're talking about is the tipping point has really come up in Joe's last comment, which is the idea of if the structure of our government radically changes, say maybe such as, and he points out, the Electoral College is done away with, do we see that forcing us into the hot side of the second civil war?
That was going to be my, and here's the thing, that's the tipping point, but they'll pass the legislation. It'll be that first election past that where Southern California decides who's going to be in charge of the rest of the states.
Mm-hmm.
But the tipping point would actually be that legislation being passed.
Here's the thing. I think we can talk about maybe the differences and what this would look like. And I'm going to default because I thought it was extremely well written. It was foreignpolicy.com. And what, I don't remember the exact terminology of the article title, but it was basically what a new civil war would look like. And he goes on to describe what that would look like. And I'm just going to read here because I won't do it justice from memory. But basically, he says that right now, I'll tell you, if you look it up in the, this is outside of his article, you look at popular opinion and kind of Rasmussen, AP polls kind of stuff, 30% of Americans think we are currently in a soft civil war, that we are that divided. So this is not, like I said, fringe lunatic conversation. This is becoming mainstream concern. And so you got 30% believing that we're there or quickly heading there. And so, but going back to the foreign policy quote, he talks about kind of guerrilla style warfare that even in the midst of a hot Civil War II, CW2, we'll call it, coining Joe's phrase in the comments, in the midst of a hot civil war, it won't be mass action. And this author envisions it being more small scale, like it was in the 60s, where you have hyper-motivated political groups carrying out targeted violence against government structure or political adversaries, almost like terrorists do. More like the 60s than the 1860s. Does that make sense? And I think that's really where I see it, short of, like Joe mentioned, radical shifts, like a hard shift into martial law where they're confiscating guns, where they're doing the internet kill switch and destroying what's left of the First Amendment, which is already in tatters, as you and I have already talked about infinitum. But the idea that it would take something that hardcore radical for us to see mass military action. And even then, I don't see it. Even from the right, I don't see it. You didn't see it in Hurricane Katrina when they were rolling out martial law and doing gun confiscation in non-impacted areas. I don't think we have that kind of grit inside of us to take that kind of large-scale action. I don't see it anymore. I think you'll see small-scale targeted violence. That's what a new civil war looks like, in my opinion. What do you guys think out there in the audience?
I was
Do you
gonna
think it
say,
would be large-scale battles? Does it depend on geography, like Josh thinks? Does it depend on how egregious the government becomes, or how egregious one party's actions become against the other side? Does the left heat up so bad that then the right is like, well, damn it, we've got to do something, and they're out in the street in marches of hundreds shooting people? Or, kind of, what are your thoughts at this point?
I don't know. Like I said, the if that does happen, that'll be like the primary catalyst. That'll be the one thing, because at that
The
point,
Electoral College, you say?
yep,
Or
abs
martial law?
yes.
Maybe. How
But
about the border wall? What if this coming week our current president says, piss on your funding, this is a national emergency, and I'm doing it by executive fiat? Do you see
well,
small scale violence bubbling up from the left over that?
yes.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, and he's really sort of overstepping with executive power if he would do that. Just like the whole thing with the bump stocks. I think certain things that he does as far as trolling and stuff like that, he's conditioning people for bigger things.
And the people on the right just they put the blinders on, almost like Netflix new series with Sandra Bullock. It's like Trump can do no evil, man, and
Right. And
he can be just as wrong as any other president from any other party.
right. And again, I would tell people to err on the side of caution. You are the voter, you are the taxpayer. Be critical regardless of who is there. I think that's some people that are they're truly will not say anything bad about that man. They won't do it. And that's a mistake. That's like the person that votes straight line party. That's a mistake.
Yeah, it is.
What if somebody on the other side, they just happen to be that guy, but they're the best person for the job and they're really good at it. And you're going to say, well, that's the wrong letter.
Yeah, they're on the wrong side of the political aisle.
Right.
Yeah, we have a point made that it depends on what kind of leadership is in the office as to how heated up a hot war could get. I will say that I think it's typically going to be short of, massive government tightening down like we haven't seen since maybe World War II with internment camps. Short of that, we are not going to see large scale violent action. I think you're more likely to see targeted political action like the 1960s. Here's the thing to think about is, how do you prepare for that? And I know this could be a whole second show, and we've done shows on preparedness in general. But you think about, well, what does I can just hear my wife's voice saying, "What's your point? What does this mean to me in the next 5 to 7 days, 5 to 7 weeks, or 5 to 7 years? What the hell are you guys even talking about?" Here's my point, is that you've got to stay vigilant. You've got to have discernment, man. I don't care if it's through prayer, meditation, your religious beliefs. You've got to develop some discernment to understand what is truth and reality in the midst of an ever increasing information warfare. You have to have some understanding of what is going on in the world. you have to get physically fit, something that you've emphasized and really kind of rubbed off on me in this new year, especially. It's that time of year we're all contemplating it. Well, hell, if you can't run a mile to save your life,
You lose.
it ain't gonna matter what the violence looks like.
Right.
No, could you physically run a mile to save your life? I would honestly have to answer probably not at this point. 300 pounds and shrinking, thank God. But getting healthier, getting mentally clearer
Right.
and understanding what is in front of us, getting more discerning instead of maybe going to these large events where you might be at risk for political. Dude, I don't care how much I love a presidential or political candidate, you are not going to catch me at a political rally in this day and age. There's no way in hell. You're just asking to be, you're not going to catch me at a march, not very often anymore.
Right.
I'm not going to go out there and try to challenge people of the opposing political view while they're swinging bike chains and sledgehammers and knives and brass knuckles. It's not because I'm a coward. It's because I value life and I have people I need to take care of. And we've got an end game that we have to focus on. And my end game is not getting taken out because I wanted to go, prove a political point in front of the state capitol. That's not big enough for me. And so we have to be discerning. We have to be physically fit and healthy. We have to have decent training with our firearms, some level of preparedness set aside, whether that's food and water or both, and prepare for challenging days ahead. And you and I have talked about this multiple times, that we have been given a window, whether you think that window is via President Trump, which, whatever, or you think it's through God's graces or just because this stuff hasn't brewed long enough yet. We have a small window where you still can take action. Physically getting healthy, preparing food and water, getting a firearm if you don't currently own one, and getting some training, getting your concealed carry, so that when mob violence kicks off, you're able to get the people you care about to safety. Not that you want to put people down. I don't want to ever have to shoot nobody, regardless of their political bent, but I want to be able to protect my family and the things that sustain our life. And so those are the kinds of things that we need to be thinking about, regardless of where this shakes out and where it goes, the idea that we have to be prepared and healthy enough to face it. What do you think about that?
I'm going to say the biggest part of being prepared right now is to not stop speaking. I don't care who tries to shut you down, shut you off, shut you out. Keep talking.
So we need an increase of dialogue instead of trying
Absolutely.
not to offend people and being concerned about their snowflake
Look,
condition. We need an exchange of ideas and a sharpening of each other.
right, and with that type of, you hate to call it arguing, but there's no other word. If you and I sit down and have a discussion and we don't agree on something,
Like Michigan versus Ohio State.
and they're go blue. Anyway,
Oh, I see what he just did to me.
set you
You
up, didn't
son of a.
I? Anyway.
He's got me holding a blue coffee cup. My Michigan family that's online watching right now is probably ready to do a backflip. Well, doggone you, next time I'm bringing a red cup and we will settle this.
With whipped cream and donuts.
You know what?
Anyway, back to back to
But
what
a healthy division and being able
right.
to laugh. Jimmy the Greek was on here, Jim Amentis, a minute ago. I don't know if he's still watching. A good friend I work with at Temkin, who is a diehard Democrat. And, look, I love him to death. We get along great. We buy each other lunch. We've been to each other's homes. We have a good working friendship. And but we are strongly opposed on a lot of political issues. But you know what? We can have these disagreements,
Right.
and we can still be civil to each other and understand that there are more important things. And we've desperately lost that in this country. And there are times where you and I disagree.
Absolutely.
And it might not always come across on this podcast, but there are times where we're like, man,
We're way off.
certain voices that,
Right.
podcasts that we'll listen to, well, on the issue of Bigfoot, Josh is just downright crazy on that issue. But I still love him. I'm still willing to sit at a table with him and discuss other issues, because just because he's wrong about Bigfoot doesn't mean that he's, my political enemy.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But no.
Anyways, we've switched into silliness, but I just want to encourage you guys, man, pursue your faith, be spiritually fit, be spiritually healthy, whatever that looks like for you. Be relationally healthy, because here's the thing, no matter what shakes out, we had a good friend that we lost down at the who passed away, that was an instructor down at the gun range down at AJ Harris recently. Chris, good dude. Just one day is here and the next day is gone. And the reality is, you know, none of us like to think about that, regardless of whether it's civil war, disease, some kind of new global pandemic, or just your heart or your blood vessels giving out on you. Mm-hmm. You have to be spiritually fit. You have to be relationally fit and keep good relations with the people you care about. And then beyond that, preparing for dark days so that you can see the people that you care for across the finish line. I think that's my closing thoughts on this issue.
My closing thoughts are, do not worry about irritating people because of something you say.
Okay.
The healthiest part of figuring something out sometimes is the fact you're going to disagree. You're going to offend somebody. That's if you think you're going to go through life, make your point and not offend anybody, you're living in fantasy land.
So then I would agree with you that an increase, and I know we have some people here watching, excuse me, that are starting to develop their own understanding of kind of independent media and what they want to do with that and making their own shows. And we always say, go for it, man. Mm-hmm. You know, get a camera out, start sending, you know, whether it's projects you're working on, whether it's your local news in your city or your city council, your school board, become a citizen journalist and be willing to have these kinds of challenging, honest, and civil conversations, even in disagreement with the people around you.
Absolutely.
All right, brother.
I think that's it.
That's almost an hour.
You know what? We jumped into the time warp.
Yeah, it goes quick on here. We appreciate everybody that's joined us. If you ever have questions, you're more than welcome to throw them in the feed after it's posted. We usually go back and address some of those. We would love to have a call-in guest at some point. Apparently, I'm going to have to incentivize that the next time we're together because we have yet to have one, and it's a goal that we're trying to accomplish. And so maybe it's a free hat or some kind of gimme that the first person that calls into our show and kind of makes us think harder than we already are, we'll get something mailed out to them. But that might be for next time.
Also, you can now pick up an all audio version of this.
Yes, on Anchor, I love it.
On Anchor FM, and we got verified for Pocket Cast as well. So we're on two different platforms now.
And that's going to keep spreading.
Right, and it goes up to 11, I believe. So yes. as each one sort of does their little screening process, mm-hmm. you go on more platforms. That way so you don't have to burn up your screen watching it on Facebook or YouTube.
Yeah, and then you can just put the audio in while you're at work like I do, or you're doing housework or whatever, and you don't have to see our ugly mugs and watch us argue over coffee cup colors.
Well, there's no argument. That's blue.
Yeah, on that note, before we get into a table flipping fight here, Bear, slow your roll there, Michigan man.
Again, the comment section's open. You can email us at patientpatriot@yahoo.com. And
I want to thank our guests for being here in the audience today. It was fun.
Absolutely. The number to contact the show is 330-809-1924. You can call that or text that. I would prefer text. Or you can email at patientpatriot@yahoo.com. That's right. And you know what? We should open it up. Does the man in the sunglasses have any questions?
Yeah, he's off camera to protect his identity. He's
right.
In a witness protection program.
And we keep him at an undisclosed location.
Yeah.
Number two.
Without a voice modifier, he doesn't seem interested in joining us. He's like, yeah, I don't want on any government radar. I will tell you, he sent me a text with some questions, so he was engaged in this show, but he chooses not to be on camera. It's kind of a secret identity, and we'll keep you guys in the dark for a couple more episodes. It's just fun to have an unknown floating out there in the periphery.
Absolutely. Do you have anything else?
No, that's it, man. Thanks for tuning in.
Stay tuned. I'll have one Sunday evening at 6 o'clock, so stick around for that.
Cool, man.
And again, comments are always open. Mm-hmm. Until next time, stay sharp, keep a tight shot, group, and rock on.